Welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler. Today is International Women's Day, a day where the world celebrates how far women have come and reminds us of how far women still have to go. Today's podcast is dedicated to that day. We also hear from David Aikman, Senior Director at the World Economic Forum and in charge of our Young Global Leaders community. This week, we announced the Young Global Leaders Class of 2012, and he tells us a little bit about who is on that list. Each year, the World Economic Forum, along with Harvard University and the University of California at Berkeley, publishes the Global Gender Gap Report. We measure how much further women have to go to close gaps in access to resources and opportunities in individual countries, and Sadia Sahidi, Senior Director at the Forum, is one of the authors. She tells us her thoughts of the importance of International Women's Day and discusses a brand new online tool companies can use to close their gender gaps.
International Women's Day is essentially an opportunity to really reflect on where we stand in terms of closing gender gaps, how far we've come, how far we still need to go, put some targets in place, look at success stories, but also look at the challenges that still need to be met. But the work that's done on International Women's Day is essentially work that needs to be done every single day.
Absolutely. It's kind of like Valentine's Day. You can't just love somebody on one day. You have to love them all year.
Exactly.
So why do we need a day like this then?
I think essentially for that purpose, to really reflect on the progress that's been made, celebrate the successes, but then ensure that the momentum around the changes that still need to be made, that momentum continues.
And where are we? Where are women in 2012? How far do we still have to go?
Well, according to the methodology used in our Global Gender Gap Report, in the world as a whole, we've closed about 93% of education gaps, about 96% of health gaps, about 60% of economic participation gaps, and then about 19% of political empowerment gaps. So clearly, while there has been a lot of progress on health and education, that gap still needs to be closed. And then obviously the gap is very evident when it comes to economic participation and political leadership of women. So using that analysis, there is some way to go.
Are you optimistic?
Very much so. If we, again, using the data from the Global Gender Gap Report and looking at the progress that's been made over the last 6 years, what we found is that 85% of countries have made progress. So 85% of countries are really moving in the right direction. And several of those, in several cases, moving forward very quickly. And what we're trying to do is understand what were the accelerators of that progress and then replicate that in other places, in other parts of the world.
Now, we're talking here about closing the gender gap, but there are also other issues that International Women's Day kind of highlights. One, violence against women. I think that's still a big one, and that seems to still be one where people seem to be at a loss. How do you feel about that? Where do you see that going?
It's very much a part of, it's another manifestation of the fact that women are often treated very differently and with some form of discrimination as compared to men. There are manifestations that show up in the economic sphere. There are manifestations that show up in the leadership sphere. But this is, of course, some of the worst that can be done because it's really attacking the sort of physical presence of women. We look at this issue through the health indicators that we have in the Global Gender Gap reports, but also, for example, at Davos this year, we looked at the issue of women, war, and peace, and how women may often be the victims of violence, but they're also very much the solution when it comes to resolving a conflict and then the peace building that happens afterwards. So they're really both the solution and, of course, also the victim.
Now, you are launching a repository. What is it? What is this repository?
Well, essentially taking a very sort of economic focus to this issue, and clearly there are so many human rights reasons for why women should have the ability to earn a living as much as men should, but taking a very economic lens to this issue, what we know is that women, because they make up one half of the population of the world, or even rather a little bit more, they also make up one half of the human capital that's available to the world. And we know that countries that make the right kind of investments in girls' education and make the right kind of investments in ensuring that women can make it into the workforce, these countries do well in terms of competitiveness. We also know that companies that make similar kinds of investments ensure that they recruit women, that they retain women, that they give them the opportunity to rise to positions of leadership. We also know that those companies perform better. And so as we look ahead, and all the projections show that the world is going to be facing a talent shortage in many parts of the world, both in developing countries and emerging markets and the developed world, it's going to be a strategic imperative for business to understand how to recruit, retain, and promote female talent. And what we've tried to do is pull together from 100 companies from different sectors, from different geographies, really clear, explicit information on what were some of the practical measures they put in place to close their own gender gaps, not just within their own structures, but also in their supply chains and also in the communities that they're active in.
Okay. So what does it do?
What you're able to do is go onto an online tool, and you can select what type of gap it is that you're interested in closing. And you can pick amongst entry-level gaps, middle management gaps, senior-level gaps, supply chain gaps, gaps in the external environment, and then search through this database, this online database, to really understand what is it that another company did. What was the specific measure they put in place? How long it took them to put it in place? What were the barriers that they faced? What were the success factors? And then also the ability to actually contact that company if you wanted to replicate a similar measure. So the overall goal is to really promote this exchange of practices between companies so that these no longer remain internal HR matters, but really something which, if one company has a successful example, another company or another organization is able to learn from it and apply the same successful example. The work is spread across six areas. So we're looking at measurement and target setting, mentorship and training, awareness, incentives and accountability, work environment and work-life balance, leadership and company commitment, and then finally responsibility beyond the office, which contains all of the measures on what you can do with your supply chains, what you can do in the communities that your company is based in.
So kind of the long-term goal of this, what is it? What are you hoping to achieve?
It's essentially to accelerate progress on gender parity in the business world, and to really allow for sharing, transparent sharing of information on what works, so that organizations are not having to take 10 years to learn by themselves, learn by doing a certain practice, when they can learn from the experience of another organization and apply similar measures.
Okay, and where can this repository be found?
www.weforum.org/genderparity.
The World Economic Forum has launched this repository with the support of one of our strategic partners, Ernst & Young. Beth Brook, Global Vice Chair of Public Policy at Ernst & Young, spoke with us about why they wanted to be a part of this project.
We believe in the importance of the endeavor. What is really important, I think we are getting organizations from the top, CEOs on down, to understand the importance of diversity in their pipelines, and women in particular. And as they start to believe, the next question they ask is, so what do we need to do? And that's what the repository is about, is answering those questions about things that seem to be practically proven by other companies as working. And the more we can share that, the more people can make progress.
What are you hoping to achieve with this?
Well, we really are hoping to achieve an acceleration of progress. Again, once people believe, they need to know what to do. And it is so helpful to know what's been tried, what's been proven, what has a chance of working at various levels in the organization and in various geographies. There's nothing else like this that exists.
And now we hear from Laura Liswood. She's the Secretary General of the Council of Women World Leaders and shares with us her views on the global gender gap.
Defining the gender gap. Well, I think it's a combination of the status of where women are and the status where men are. I think if you look at the gender gap report, for example, that the World Economic Forum's put together, it's what resources are going to women and girls and what resources are going to men and boys. And that, I think, really does define in many ways the gender gap. I think you could also define it not just from a statistical perspective, but from a more emotional perspective. That is, how do people perceive women? What roles do they think women can play well? What roles and how they perceive men? You know, do people automatically think man when they think leader, you know, and not think woman? You know, that to me is a gender gap. So it's both an attitudinal and a role gap, if you will, and then also the statistics. Well, I think it's a good observation that women also have perceptions of who they are, what they can be, how confident they are in themselves, what roles they see that they could play. Some of it, I think, most of it probably comes from sort of society and how they've grown up, what role models they see on television, in the movies, on stage, you know, who's in the plenaries, as it were. So we can do some internalizing around that too. And so maybe there's a little bit of a gap between how men perceive themselves and how women perceive themselves. In fact, there's some very fun little research that says that men will have a tendency to have what's known as positive illusion. Yeah. Women have a tendency to have what's known as negative illusion. So the researchers said, they asked men on a spectrum of body types, you know, body types, pick a body type that most closely resembles your body type. Okay, for the men, two body types better than their body type. For the women, two body types worse than their body type. So I think you're right. There is some things in there. And women, I think, have been acculturated to minimize, you know, their accomplishments. You know, I think they know they've accomplished things, but I think society kind of says, don't brag, don't toot your own horn, don't show, you know, too much, you know, ambition. Well, I mean, the business case for women, and for, I want to also say, for other historically underrepresented groups, you know, because women are part of historically underrepresented groups. You know, there's dominant groups and there's non-dominant groups. You know, there's historically overrepresented groups and historically underrepresented groups. And the dynamic for women is also somewhat the same dynamic for other groups that haven't been historically in power, that haven't been historically utilized fully, their talent and their creativity, et cetera. So, you know, we're part of a bigger group, and some of the same dynamics occur. So it's always important for me, at least, to be able to make that statement. But having said that, you know, there's plenty of research now that shows that you cannot underutilize 50% of your talent. You know, and particularly in this moment where women are getting as much, if not more, education, you know, countries are paying for this education, but they're maybe not getting the return on their investment for what they've been paying for to get women educated, because some of the cultural norms are still slowing that down. You know, I mean, the gender gap report's interesting in that regard, in the sense that it's showing that health gaps are closing and education gaps are closing, not completely, but the trend. Yeah. What seems to be slower to close are economic opportunity and participation numbers and political participation. So we all, I think, thought, get girls educated, get women and girls healthy, and then naturally, the economic numbers would show improvement, political numbers would show improvement. Turns out there's nothing natural about it. Turns out there's some cultural norms that are kind of proscribing, slowing the stuff down. But there's no question that, you know, Goldman Sachs has done some excellent research on, you know, if women were more fully utilized, the rate of GDP would grow. You know, other organizations like Ernst & Young have done this kind of research. Catalyst has done this kind of research. The Forum, you know, with the correlation of the gender gap report and the competitiveness report, you know, showing that there is this correlation. So, I mean, I think the business case has been made. I'm at the point believing that when people say, show me the business case, they're really saying, no, I don't want to do anything. Yeah. Because it's already known. The information is known. People just may not want to take it in. I think we need to continue gathering the best practices, you know, because no company is perfect. But if you get a whole bunch of companies, you're going to find perfection, you know, by picking and choosing the best practices. So I think the repository makes a lot of sense, you know, and for companies that want to kind of skip a generation of development, that want to move themselves more rapidly, that's the kind of thing the repository can help. I think so the how now it becomes essential. How do we do these things? I also believe that there are still so many unconscious cultural blocks that also needs to be a next step. You know, how do we remove, or how do we make people more aware that they may have some unconscious beliefs about who people are? You know, and that companies that say we're a meritocracy may actually not be. You know, and how do we give them the tools, you know, to evaluate themselves truthfully to see whether they really are a meritocracy? Because I don't know any senior leader would say, well, I don't want to be a meritocracy. You know, they may say I am, but if we can show them that, yeah, hold on here. Maybe it's not quite that. You know, but here is a way to evaluate yourself, and here's some of the tools that can help you. That's where I think the next step has to go.
And finally, the Young Global Leaders Class of 2012 has been announced. David Aikman, Senior Director at the World Economic Forum and the man who looks after this community, shares with us what a young global leader is and who some of the new ones are.
So a young global leader is someone who's really distinguished themselves not only in their professional career, but also in their contribution to society. So we look for leaders under 40 who have done amazing things with the resources and the talents that they've been given. If it's somebody from the business sector, we look for not only an outstanding career, but also contributions to society, serving on volunteer boards or not-for-profit organizations. And for people who are in other fields, we look for people who are really trying to have an impact, a positive impact on society. So if they're a journalist looking at the kind of stories that they've written and the kind of impact that they're trying to, the issues that they're trying to raise, similarly with artists or others. And that way really choose a class of people who are global in their focus of trying to make the world a better place.
So it's not just business people or politicians. You have a wide array of people that you look at.
The Forum of Young Global Leaders is probably the most diverse community within the World Economic Forum. We have leaders from every walk of life now probably about 100 countries represented. And really, 50% of the community is from business. I mean, there's a high, that's the highest group that we have. But yes, we also have leaders from politics, from arts and culture, intellectual leaders, so outstanding researchers and scientists. And really, we have a belief that leadership comes in all sorts of different shapes and sizes. And if we're really going to tackle the most challenging problems in the world today, we need that diversity of leadership, and we need that diversity of opinions. So when, you know, when we release the list, you're not going to see necessarily big stars, but actually the people within their field are actually rock stars.
Okay. Now, what is the criteria? Is there a certain set, a list of criteria that these people have to fulfill?
So, I mean, the obvious one is they have to be young. So they're nominated under 40. I think our median age right now is about 37. They have to have really demonstrated results. So whether that's in the corporate world, a really clear career trajectory and responsibility over major businesses or business units. In other fields, like in politics, you know, they need to be elected officials or of a certain level within the administration in order to be really considered a leader. Beyond that, really we try to look at as I said earlier, the impact that they've had on society. So what kinds of things have they done? How many lives have they affected? How many people have they helped?
Now, but let's speak of this year's class of young global leaders. Who are you particularly excited about? How many people are going to be part of this class?
So we have 192 this year, young global leaders from 59 countries. About 41% are women. which is getting there towards gender parity. We'd like to see this community really be reflective of the future of leadership that we see around the world. And as I said, you know, there probably aren't a lot of stars and household names, but a lot of really solid planets there. Some of them that come to mind are people like Tom Hume, who started IDEO.org, which is a very interesting organization. It's a design firm, IDEO. They've designed some of the most amazing products in the world. But he came up with the idea to say, how could we apply design to humanitarian causes or to NGOs? And let's start a kind of more open design process that really human-based, you know, that sort of really reflects this, and take what we do very commonly in the, you know, in the marketing or the product world, and apply that to NGOs and to humanitarian needs, which, you know, is really, really innovative. Someone that people might have heard of is Emmanuel Jal, who was a child soldier in Sudan and is now a singer and an activist trying to bring awareness to the problem of child soldiers and displaced children, and has been doing great work around the world. And we really just wanted to recognize that and hold that up as an example of someone making an impact on the community. Another one is Salman Khan. You may not have heard of, but he started something called the Khan Academy, which is probably the largest online school now. And it started out with him sending a lecture back to a family member in, I think it was Pakistan, to give her tutoring over online. And the video was such a success, she shared it with her friends and helped so many people, that he then started recording a series of lectures. And he was recognized by Bill Gates as his favorite teacher. So he's a neat addition to the community. People like Franz Koch, who's the CEO of Puma Sportswear in Germany, has been doing great work and obviously helping the world be healthier and better. But then also people like Liu Jiachen, who's the Secretary General of the All China Youth Federation, doing great work with young people all across China. People like that are being recognized this year. Rebecca Sachs, who's an MIT professor, doing amazing work on cognitive development and brain research. We think she'll be a neat addition to the community as we try to think our way through some of the big problems. That's just a sampling, give you some of the diversity, but all 192 of them are amazing.
That's it for today's podcast. I'm Michelle Mishler. Thanks for listening.